50 years ago, on July 21st, 1969, Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin became the first people to set foot on the moon. You probably know Neil Armstrong's words. This is one step for man, one giant leap for mankind. Armstrong said these words as one of the largest television audiences gathered around their TVs to watch this incredible event. But there were other words spoken during this broadcast. Buzz Aldrin said, "Houston, this is Eagle. This is the LM, our lunar module pilot speaking. Would like to request a few moments of silence. I would like to invite each person listening in, whether wherever or whomever he or she may be, to contemplate for a moment the events of the past few hours, and to give thanks in his or her own individual way." The Tablet, which is an international Catholic magazine, reported on what happened next. Aldrin himself had planned how he would use this time a few days earlier, actually, while still on Earth, which is a weird thing to say if you think about it. He was a devout Presbyterian, and together with a few friends, he had gathered for a private Eucharistic service at his church. And at the end of this service, the pastor had given Aldrin a small communion host, a piece of bread, and a flask of wine, and a tiny chalice, which the astronaut packed in a small pouch of his personal possessions, what he was allowed to take with him. He wanted to express his feelings that what they were doing transcended electronics and computers and rocketry. So here he was on the moon, having spoken these words, the words that we just shared today, and people say in different languages over the last 2,000 years or so. He poured the wine from the flask into this tiny chalice, and the gravity on the moon made it so that the wine started to roll out of this chalice, and it reminded him of branches, like it's branching off, you know, like rivers do. And he said in this article that the passage that we had today from John came to mind. "I am the vine, you are the branches. Whoever remains in me and I in him will bear much fruit, for you can do nothing without me." With that, Aldrin ate the bread and drank the wine, and this, I guess, was the first meal on the moon ever. No, I still don't think I've figured out this passage from the Gospel of John, what Jesus is trying to say, though. I remember hearing this passage a lot growing up in the church I had that I grew up in, that was maybe pretty cranky of a church and a very judgy church. So I remember the focus on the passage tended to deal with the eternal punishment and how, you know, if we didn't abide in Jesus, we're all going to hell or something like that. I also remember another sermon about pruning from this passage, that somehow God disciplines the faithful in a kind of harsh, punitive way so that they stay on track in their faith. And I guess, outside of realizing that church maybe wasn't the best place for me to go, I realized that maybe and turned off to this passage in many ways. Today, though, I think there is still something here that's rather beautiful and life-giving. Now, our new church mission statement is printed in your programs as the call to worship, and it says that we are a welcoming and inclusive community where all are invited to connect, serve, worship, celebrate, learn, and grow with God's help. Today, we continue our series that looks at our new mission and vision statements and focus on what it means to connect and serve. In our gospel passage this morning, Jesus uses a grapevine metaphor to describe his connection to God and to those that follow him. Here, Jesus is the vine, God is the vine dresser, and his followers are the branches or the canes. Each of these roles have a purpose. The canes bear fruit. The vine or the trunk or the scion brings nutrients up from the ground and provides nourishment to the canes so they can bear fruit. And the vine dresser, the vineyard owner here, cares for the overall health of the plant and ensures that it fulfills its purpose, which is to grow grapes. There's a lot of language about abiding later on, and it kind of seems redundant because Jesus says abiding 9 times. In the Greek, and for the purpose of our passage, I think we could just simplify it to say that Jesus is talking about some sort of connection. To participate in the life of the church or the sacraments, to read, hear the words of Jesus, or to emulate Jesus in some way, that this is what it means to abide. It's to remain connected. If Jesus is a grapevine, then we too would be kind of like a grapevine. But Jesus goes the next step and he begins describing what kind of fruit his followers are to produce and describes it as love. In our passage, Jesus defines this love as sacrificial. You know, no greater love has someone shown than they lay down their life for their friend. Love is also defined as somehow breaking down hierarchies or master, slave, or teacher, disciples. Those paradigms, we are no longer servants, but you are no longer servants, but I call you now my friends. And finally, love is what connects Jesus' followers to the divine. Whatever you ask of God in my name, God will provide for you. Often we, or perhaps at least I, get stuck on this idea of Christian love. It feels way too general and poorly defined. And if I'm honest, when a preacher begins talking about love, that's kind of when my mind starts to wander. You know, haven't we heard this one already? That's usually where I enter. Or, you know, what happens when the preacher or the pastor falls into cliches, you know, like the type that are stitched on my grandmother's pillows in her living room, or ones that I can find like plastered all over the Hallmark store in the mall. Or perhaps worse, what if the sermon goes for another 10 minutes, but because love is only described as this kind of big, nebulous pool of good feelings that we're supposed to have toward one another, we end up treading water in this bathtub warm pond of general agreement, and then we exit because we're bored and we need to get back to real life. I do find it interesting, though, that in this passage, the fruit that Jesus' followers are to bear represent some sort of tangible, real-to-life outcome of their faith. And for Jesus, the word love is what works here. He could have used any other word, literally. He could have used justice or peace or solidarity or compassion or self-reliance or resistance or withdrawal or unity or reconciliation or charity or generosity. But he chose love. And he used it to describe a type of connectedness and service that lie at the core of our faith. That people of faith actually give up something. They sacrifice a part of their favor or their wealth or their time, their energy, their patience, perhaps even their safety and security as part of their connection to one another, to the wider church or to their communities or to the wider world. That people of faith with this great challenge ahead of them are not called to do this alone. They are fed by a vine, by the vine, the trunk or the scion that nourishes individual Christians and entire communities of faith with stories of faith, rituals that have meaning and fellowship with other people. And that this thing, whatever, however we define love, is the way that we are connected to all things sacred, that the divine in our lives and the lives of others and in this world, it's in some ways like a measurement. You know, whatever is loving connects us to God, and whatever connects us to God looks something like love. May we be loving because that's what we're called to be as people of faith, to give of ourselves with help from God and for God's sake. And may we find in this week ahead a time when we are called to be especially loving, to make the life of ourselves or someone around us, whether we know them or not, better. And someone in this community or the surrounding communities or someone we will never meet. For the glory of God. Amen.